We find Lindy in the park, a fat, awkward girl sweating in the heat with her jeans rolled up, trainers kicked onto the grass next to her. She sits in the dappled shade of a tree, cross-legged, picks at a scab on her hand, reads from a paperback. We can't see the title. Her eyes dart up from the page sometimes, as if she might be looking for someone. We sit near her, but she doesn't look in our direction, not once. We watch her tuck a strand of grease-slicked hair behind her ears. She's one of those grubby girls, needs to wash more, chews her nails, wears too much black to hide her weight. She picks at the grass next to her bare feet and squints across the park as though she's still waiting. 20 minutes pass and nobody comes. She makes no effort to move from the grass. Her book lies in her lap, the breeze flapping the pages open. We think she looks small here, a girl on her own in a vast field where students are drinking, couples share picnics, men play football. We boil a kettle on the Calla gas stove we brought here. We unpack a jar of instant coffee, sachets of sugar, a carton of milk. It's all laid out on the grass in front of us, and we argue quietly over who should be the first to meet her. Martin thinks it should be me. He says I'm ready for it now. But the others want to draw straws, so Martin finds 2 long blades of grass and a short one. He lines them up in his hand and holds them out. I feel nervous, put my fingers out for the middle one. Make sure you're certain, he says, and his dark eyes narrow. I change my mind, shut my eyes and pull it out. Decided, Martin says. I take a deep breath as I walk over. I put a friendly smile on my face, count backwards from 10. Excuse me, I say. She looks up, startled. Do you want a coffee? I ask, pointing back towards Martin and the others. We've got plenty. We thought you might want one. She blinks at me. I can see she's searching for an answer, her eyes doubtful, teeth biting her bottom lip as if she's chewing the decision over. She looks young, younger than we thought. She might be 16, no more. I tell her, we're just being friendly. It doesn't matter if you don't want to. I turn, maybe 45 degrees away from her, as if I might start walking back, but she says, no, don't go. I'm not sure. How many of you are there? 4, I tell her. Martin, me, Jonas, he's Danish, he's going back soon, and Fiona. I notice all the badges on her bag, all the bands she must like. I say, you'll get on with Fiona. She likes all kind of music, rock, thrash, metal. I'm Lindy, she says, holding out her hand. I wipe mine on the back of my jeans and shake hers. We learn that Lindy is away from home, lonely, homesick. She comes from a village in South Wales. None of us can pronounce the name properly. She has 5 brothers who are all older than her. They never let her do anything she wants, always taking her places, picking her up, insisting on staying with her sometimes. At home, it was claustrophobic. But now I'm here, she says, it's like I miss them. Their noise in the mornings, fighting over the bathroom. At least somebody cared where I was, she says. Martin sits close to her. He puts his hand on her knee. It's a subtle move, but deliberate. We all notice it. But Lindy doesn't. She carries on talking, and Martin lets her, and we watch as she opens up more and more, and the coffee gets cold, and people start leaving the park as it's getting later in the day and cooler. You should come back for tea, Martin says. She looks around the park, noticing other people have left. She stands up and brushes soil from her jeans. She fiddles with the badges on her bag as though she's tidying them, but we know she's nervous. She's realising she doesn't know us. It's only been a few hours. She's aware she's been talking about herself, hasn't even asked about us. We only live local, Martin says, and this makes her more nervous. She's clumsy with her trainers, trying to pull them on her heel at the same time as standing. Her weight makes this difficult. She almost loses her balance, starts again, leans against a tree while she tries to hurry, putting on first one trainer, then the other without unfastening the laces. "Well, we could go for a curry," Martin says. "There's a great place over there. Look," he points to Wilmslow Road. "I've never had curry," she says. "Never had curry," Martin repeats, and we all repeat it, saying how she must come for a curry. It would be a shame to miss out all those naan breads and poppadoms and bhajis she's never tasted. She wavers. Before she can give an answer, the stove is packed up, the coffee, the stack of plastic cups. We're standing and walking with Linda to the edges of the park. We're telling her how great it'll be, how lucky we feel to have found her, how it's obviously meant to be. Lindy loosens up with alcohol. We order her a glass of wine, which she doesn't like but drinks anyway. We order her a pint of Kingfisher, and she drinks it too quickly, so we order her another one. We laugh, say it must be the heat, and her body's probably dehydrated. We break up poppadoms and dip them in mango chutney and lime pickle. Martin puts a chunk of lime pickle on a bit of poppadom and feeds it to Lindy. We watch her face flush with the heat from the pickle. She gulps from her third pint, laughs. When she pushes a chair back from the table, she staggers a little as if she didn't realise how much she'd drunk. "Toilet," she says, her napkin dropping to the floor. Martin looks at me, his eyes following her as she walks across the restaurant, then telling me to go after her. I follow her to the bathroom. She's in the cubicle. I hear the zip of her jeans, the struggle of denim over wide hips, then a lengthy pause before her piss streams into the toilet bowl. It's endless. A pause, then a dribble. Lindy sighs while she pulls up her trousers. I switch the tap on and watch her in the mirror as she comes out. "Hi, Lindy," I say. She says, "Oh, hi." Washes her hands, dries them on a paper towel. "Your friends are so nice," she says. I smile at her reflection and agree. Lindy tells us she lives in halls of residence. She's 18, just. Her birthday is the end of August. She came here in September. She wanted to get away from home as soon as she could. She studies French and psychology, joint honours. She's never been to France, but she had a French girl stay at their house once. It was an exchange organised by school. Only she didn't go and stay with the French family because her brothers didn't want her to go abroad alone. She takes huge mouthfuls of chicken dansak, stuffs herself with pishwari naan, and tells us how she finds it hard to make friends usually, how she struggles to talk to people sometimes. We laugh and say, "That doesn't seem like you, Lindy, does it?" "No, that doesn't seem like Lindy." A giddy smile opens up her mouth while she's eating. We can see half-chewed bread clogging up her teeth. She has a smudge of grease on her chin. Martin wipes it off with his thumb. He says, "You look pretty when you're smiling, Lindy." Lets his fingers brush against her cheek just for a second. He reaches down under the table for his bag, rummages for his digital camera. He says, "Take a picture of me and Lindy." She shakes her head and says, "No, don't." But we can see how pleased she is. She lets him put his arm around her so we can take a picture. We abandon our food and arrange ourselves around Lindy, ask a waiter to take our photo. She squints at the pictures on the viewer. "Oh God, I look so awful," she says. Martin says, "How can you say that, Lindy? You're so pretty." And we all agree with him. Tell her, "You are pretty, Lindy. Can't you see it?" We talk about her Marmite brown eyes, the way her nose turns up at the end, just a little, and how when she smiles, her whole face smiles. We say, "Has nobody ever said that to you, Lindy?" She shakes her head, and her fringe falls across her face. Martin says, "Look, you're doing it now, Lindy." Her face is a beetroot blush, and he holds her hand under the table. She doesn't pull it away. In fact, she clings to him, flushed with beer and curry and the heat that still lingers in the air. We invite Lindy back to our house, just for a nightcap, a hot chocolate or a vodka if she wants it. She kicks back two small shots of vodka and sinks into the cushions, talking with Fiona about Marilyn Manson and Korn and Queens of the Stone Age. They talk about a music festival that Lindy's never been to, and Martin says maybe we can all get tickets if you want. We could all go together. Lindy is too pleased to speak, eyes beer glazed, a sweat slick across her forehead. She throws her arms around his neck and he tickles her, won't let her go, makes her dance with him. We watch them swaying in the middle of the lounge with no music. I hear myself telling Fiona how happy I was when I first came here. Jonas is saying how he'll be gutted to leave, but we're all watching Lindy. She leans against Martin's shoulder with her eyes closed, his arms around her waist, holding her in the same way he held me. I remember feeling weightless, as if he might carry me. Lindy's feeling this too. I know it. I see Fiona glancing at her reflection in the mirror, and she knows it too. But Lindy is lost in a music only she can hear. She laughs. The girls laugh, playful, relaxed, flirtatious. She lets herself fall back onto the settee carelessly. Her eyes are still closed, and she lets him touch her, her neck, her shoulder, the length of her arm. His fingers trail across her skin, making lazy patterns. He looks over at us. We keep talking, but the look is noted. It says, "We're nearly there now. It won't be long." He lets his hand run down the outside of her thigh, and she seems peaceful, almost asleep as he strokes her. He's telling her something, quietly. I can't hear what he's saying, but I can imagine. He's telling her she shouldn't cover herself in so many clothes. She's got a gorgeous figure, and men love women with curves. He squeezes one of her thighs and slides his hand between them. He kisses her neck. He's still talking to her, and she's laughing again, a giggly half-cut laugh. He unfastens her shirt without her even noticing. He does it button by button while he's distracting her with compliments. When his hand strokes the bare skin of her stomach, she blinks her eyes wide open. He's close to her, almost on top of her. I hear him say, "Nobody's watching, Lindy." His mouth quietens her. But we all watch. Fiona has the camera. Martin gave it to her earlier. She holds it tight, and I notice there are sweat pearls along the curve of her hand. I can feel her shaking. Jealousy, maybe. Discomfort. How I felt when we first found Fiona. Only Lindy isn't like me, or Fiona. She tries to pull back, struggles a little. I hear her voice, a small sound, almost involuntary. A moan, I think, at first. But then I hear it as a quiet, no. Tongue bitten, almost swallowed, no. Martin is pressing his mouth against hers. He struggles with the zip on her jeans. Fights with it as she wriggles underneath him. She tries to lift her head, but he presses his hand flat against her forehead and pushes it down. He laughs. It's not a friendly laugh. We all stop talking and look at Martin with unexpected questions, and at Lindy, pinned down under Martin. He kneels on her legs, finally ripping open the zip on her jeans, and she's making a strangled noise, almost suffocated. "For fuck's sake, Lindy, you're making this difficult," he shouts, his body pressing down on her. He grabs a cushion, forces it over her face. And I think, it isn't supposed to be like this. I hear my voice break into the room. Martin, can't you see I'm busy, he says. Fuck is everyone stupid? You need to help me off with her jeans, fat bitch. Fuck, these jeans are too tight. She grabs his clothes, his hair, pushing him away. Hold her arms, Martin says, to nobody in particular, and Jonas moves behind them, gripping hold of her, stopping her from moving. I stare at them, a jumble of arms and legs, all struggling. Was I like this? Fiona asks. She says my name, and I find it hard to answer her. I clear my throat and say, not the same, no. She asks, I didn't struggle. No, I say. She's digging her nails in her palm. I can't stay in here, she says in a quiet voice, almost silent. We sit in the kitchen and wait for the kettle to boil. We try to block out the Lindy noise by playing the radio loud. We sing, making up the words, shouting them over the radio, over the kettle boiling, over the other noise. We tap against the table with spoons, bang empty cups. But we can still hear the crying. It's loud, louder than if we were Lindy, louder than anything. It's an inside noise, a noise that starts in our gut and is forced into our chest. It bruises our throat and grows until we can't hold it in anymore.